Good afternoon, and welcome to kosherclasses.org video and audio web conference and teleconference all rolled up in one. We're trying again this month with Dimdim, and we do have a full house of 20 people signed up on the Dimdim. That's the maximum that we'll take for this beta testing. And the telephone number that you're calling in on, those that are calling in, it can take an unlimited amount. And I'm here today with Rabbi Baruch Beyer, sitting right here. My name is Rabbi Tzvi Goldberg. We're both from Star K in Baltimore. And running the show is Zev Steen, who's out of the picture here.
Wait, Zev.
Literally out of the picture, but he's running the technical aspects. And again, we're just trying the computer system again. I think that it worked very well last time. We had a very animated discussion. People could chat with us. We'd like to take questions. If you have a question and you're calling in by phone, hit 1-1 on your keypad and we'll see that you have a question and we'll be able to take that question. And you'll hear a little voice saying, "Go." You can speak now, and then you'll know that your question is ready. This conference is a monthly conference, and it's scheduled for the last Wednesday of every month at noon.
Right.
Which today is not Wednesday, right?
That's far enough.
Right, it wasn't this morning, so
we had
some technical difficulties.
Bad weather on the internet.
I was out on a visit, on an initial inspection out west, and I could not make it back from my visit due to the bad weather here in Baltimore. And there was an ice storm, and therefore we had to cancel it yesterday and push it off to today. But what I wanted to start with is some of the experiences we've had on these visits, which is sometimes, you know, it sounds exotic. You get to travel all sorts of places and go all across the country and the world. But sometimes when you're in it, it's a little, it's difficult. I wasn't going to say that, but I'm glad that I didn't buy it. It's a little bit of a, it could be a little bit of a schlep. And, but, you know, we do our job and we want to keep things kosher, make things kosher so people will be able to have kosher food all over. I think before I get into that, what I saw in my visit, I want to mention, we'll talk a little bit about the raisins. Those of you in the know that the raisins have become a hot issue over the past couple of days, and I would be surprised if nobody asked us that question, so we'll preempt that, and we'll get to that later in the show. But I was visiting in a plant. Of course, everything has to be confidential. That's our bread and butter, that were confidential. Imagine if I started telling the name of the company I was at and what the problems were, and
thank you for that reminder. I don't want that
one. We quickly would lose that company and perhaps cause great damage to the Starcade. That's really the lifeblood of Kashrus, is that the companies trust us. We have information that is so valuable, that's worth millions to competitors. I kid you not. The competitors would love to know the information that the kosher agencies know, and that's our solemn agreement, is that we will not disclose any particulars. So, I was in some unnamed company. How does it go? In some hidden bunker somewhere, and making an inspection. And it was a relatively simple company. It didn't have that much.
We can say what it was.
Well, they were preparing some grains and things like that. So it's probably what we would call a group one, meaning it doesn't really need that serious hashkacha. The visits are not that often. But for the initial inspection, we like to have somebody go from the office who has been in kashrus, is dedicated to kashrus, and perhaps has a better look at it. And there wasn't anything really to see, except they had this machinery that sometimes got a little bit rusty the dies that they would use got a little bit too tight onto the machine. So they need to get it off. So how do they get it off? This is actually, the food is sent through, extruded through those dies. Now the way that they get it off is they spray it with some vegetable oil.
And so I said, aha, that is something that needs to be taken care of, because that has to be kosher.
Right.
Because that, it touches, it's not a machine oil that hits, let's say, the engine or something, the motor of the equipment. It actually touches the metal that touches the food. So that needs to be kosher. And that's something that easily could be missed. And it was hashgacha that it happened to be out there on the table, and I saw it, and I mentioned to them that we're going to insist that be kosher. Now, that's something that you would never see as an ingredient. It's not an ingredient that you would ever see listed on a product, because the FDA considers that a processing aid,
right,
and it doesn't have to be listed on the ingredients. It's just something to help smooth things along, right? So you don't always get all the information when you read the ingredient panel. However, that would be such a little amount that it would be bottle nullified. But still, we insist that everything be kosher before we give a certification. So that was something that we had to deal with. I'll give Rabbi Beyer a chance to speak up on any of your facilities.
A couple of things come to mind. There are times where we say that hashkacha needs hashkacha, which basically means that we rely on Hashem to kind of hold our hand and make sure that what we're doing is correct. It puts us in the places that we need to be at the times we need to see things, which is what happened with Rabbi Goldberg, I think. Recently, I was at a candy making facility. And this is also for an initial inspection. This is our first time at the facility. And I remember we were walking through the plant and we're having a discussion with the owner who's taking us through. We were explaining to him the fact that he has a production for marshmallows in the plant was problematic for us, because marshmallows many times
have gelatin.
Gelatin,
right,
based. And we were explaining to him, well, basically what he was doing was taking marshmallows and dipping them into various coatings and what have you. So one of the coatings he had there was a chocolate. It was a big chocolate melter, and he was saying, "Oh, we never dip it into the chocolate. Doesn't happen." And as he's explaining this to us, and we're walking around, so we're looking over at this production, and we see the workers begin to
dip the
marshmallows
into
the chocolate. And he says, "I was saying, so they never do it except for today, right?" I says, I tell them not to do it. I don't know why,
they were eating it for themselves?
No, they actually were doing it. So he said that he explained to them not to do it, and they're doing it anyway, and he's sorry, he apologized.
And what were, the marshmallows weren't?
The marshmallows were
not kosher,
no. So it was just underscored this whole idea that, we were at the right place at the right time when we saw it, and we were able to point out to him the fact that this is a real issue, and that's why we needed to make some major changes in the company before we go ahead and certify it.
Right. So we need to be in the right place at the right time. Now, if anybody is on the chat on the computer, you can ask a question, and we'll be able to chat with you and see your questions. One thing I want to show you on the computer, I can bring up certain web pages. And that will hide your chat, but you can just click show chat. And one thing I want to show you here is on latest Starkey lists, we just put up this information on our beer and liquor list about acceptable beers. We always had the information, but, this doesn't seem to come up, but okay, it's there somewhere. It's there somewhere. We just put up the information about the beers, the domestic beers and foreign beers, and it's here on this latest Starkey list page on our website. So I thought that would be kind of interesting for people to see. It has nothing to do with what you were talking about, Rabbi Beyer. Yeah, the beer and liquor list that should be on your screen. And it's on star-k.org is our website. Well, I was in a plant. We do have some questions, but let me just mention this. I was in a factory. When we say plant, of course, we mean factory, Rabbi Beyer, right?
Yeah.
I came home once and I told my kids that I was at a licorice plant, and I could see the puzzlement on their
yeah.
faces. They thought maybe like I walked into a botanical garden and was like inside
right.
something that was growing licorice.
Right.
So what do you say, plant? So I was in a particular factory, not a licorice factory for this, and they were making some sort of sauce, and they had vinegar that went into the sauce, and then they had on site, though, they had non-kosher wine vinegar that wasn't going into the product that was potentially going to be made there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's called a compatible ingredient,
right.
And I had to make sure that when the production was being made that that would be off limits, that the mashgiach would tape it up or seal it up, and that couldn't be used. And that is an issue that we look for compatible ingredients that aren't kosher. We do have a couple of questions. One about the raisins. Okay. And do you have any story about when you did not certify a plant? We have many times that we don't always certify. Are there any that come to mind that we rejected? Okay, we'll think about that. We'll keep that in mind as we go forward. Well, I think that the raisin issue is going to be an issue for those that have heard about it.
It's a sticky issue.
It's a sticky issue. Okay, I'm the straight man here, Rabbi Beyer.
Sorry.
So the issue with the raisins, for those that have heard about it, is vexing, and those who haven't heard about it probably would like to hear what's going on.
Don't eat the raisins.
Well... Is that the answer? I don't know about that. There have been some reports that raisins are infested. The expression being used in some sites is a worldwide infestation of raisins. And there are those agencies. A couple of agencies have recommended not to eat any raisins at all at this point. Be it, I think, even in cereals or wherever it is. And so I think that the problem was discovered with a particular brand, Mishpacha brand. We can say that because that's public information.
I heard it was in Canada, actually.
Yeah. And the Mishpacha brand, which is what they call a Hamisher brand, not literally, but like a Jewish brand of
right.
company. And they had a problem with finding, they found little worms in the raisins, in the packaged raisins. And that's, of course, a problem because raisins are kosher, but the worms that come along with them are not kosher. Worms, insects, thrips, aphids, they're all not kosher, and it would be a major problem if you found the worms in your raisins. So they recalled those raisins.
Right. I mean, just by way of explanation a little bit, which helps put the thing in a little bit of better light, this is what I understand from discussions yesterday with people, that the raisins where they originally discovered the infestation were actually, these were not fresh raisins. These are raisins on the way out, basically. And, you know, so that's something to consider, whether or not, you know, were the worms present, at the beginning, or did they only come around later when the things started to go bad, which I think is important to remember.
Right. Well, right. One of the issues is that, let's say, Dole or Sun-Made raisins, they pack every day.
Right.
Right? They may even pack 24 hours a day, for all I know. Some plants are open constantly, right? So they're getting in fresh raisins. However, whenever you have this kind of brand, they don't own raisin factories. These kind of brands, what they do is they go to other factories that do pack raisins, and they pack them on a particular day. That's not just true with Mishpacha, but all those similar types of brands. It's not a secret that they do that. And so that's not done every day. You know, it's probably not even done every week. You know, I don't know their packing schedule, but it's limited to they pack and they and then they do that under hashgacha, and then they sell, and then when they need more, they go back and they pack again. So it's certainly going to be older. However, I've heard that they're finding, even in current, some of the Dole and the Sunmade, they are finding some worms in those, and that's kind of disconcerting. However, it's not necessarily so widespread. It's not necessarily going to be something that's going to prohibit raisins completely.
Right.
At this point, well, let me see. We have a question here. Oh, this is back, going back to the plants, the factories. We'll get back to that discussion in a minute. That was our advertised subject, so we'll get back to that.
Right.
But at this point, what we're telling people is that they should just look at their raisins and see if it's really infested into the point where they are crawling with insects, then you can't use those. But otherwise, we're not prohibiting the raisins totally. I don't think that the other major agencies are. I don't think the OU is going to prohibit it. What?
Right. The only agency that we know of that's actually prohibiting it straight out is the KHA.
KHA, right. I'm not sure what their thinking is. But there are also, besides, there are really two questions. And one is practical, whether or not it's a widespread issue, which is being investigated. And then the question is whether or not there are halachic issues, mitigating factors over here, whether or not it would really be forbidden. That depends on how common it is, on whether how noticeable it is, and various halachic issues, Jewish law issues,
right,
that need to be investigated. And at this point, my feeling is that it's going to come out okay. That's my feeling at this point, although we don't have all the information yet. But I think that it's going to come out to be that the raisins will be okay.
Deal with some of these questions here.
Okay, so let's deal with some of the questions. Again, if you have a question by chat, you can chat with us, or if you have a question through the telephone, you can hit 1-1 on your keypad, and we'll see that you have a question. We'll recognize you again. Just to review, I'm Rabbi Tzvi Goldberg. This is Rabbi
Baruch
Beyer. And Zev Steen is helping us with the technical aspects.
Somebody just something in from MK Kosher, Montreal Kosher.
Okay, Montreal Kosher is also seems to have a problem with their raisins. Okay, so you're going to find various. This is like any issue in Jewish law, that there are going to be various discussions and maybe even disagreements. But as far as I know, the OU is not forbidding them yet, and I know that the Star K is not. So we have a question whether or not, if you have a box of ShopRite raisins, can I continue to use them? And the answer is, we would say, at this point, just look at them to see that they're not crawling, I guess would be
the
word.
And
then
you can
look at them, and then at this point we're saying that you can eat them. Okay, so let's get back to. Should we go back and forth here? We'll go back to the. I think that covers the raisins in the broad sense. And if you have any more particular questions, you're welcome to ask us. And if you have questions on any topic, we'll take that too. We're very open to. Whatever you want to talk about. Somebody's asking, approximately how long does it take to inspect and certify a plant? And how often is there a repeat inspection of a factory once they have received the Star Kei Hashgacha? That's a very good question. And that question we get mostly from the companies, the first question, how long does it take? Right. Rabbi, how long is this going to be? Because
right.
I need it yesterday.
Right.
And what I say, I mean, you get that question too, I'm sure, Rabbi Beyer. Well, how do you answer that question?
I mean, it all depends on where the company is located and how complicated it is. That's usually how we start. But, you know, if we have a company overseas that's asking for a shkofa, that could be you know, a lot more or take a lot longer than it would for a company here in the States. I mean, I deal a lot of times with bakeries, commercial bakeries, so if you want to take that as an example.
Okay.
It would probably take from the beginning, from the first conversation until we actually certify them, I would imagine something in the realm of, if we're doing it really fast, it might take, we can maybe possibly do it in 2 weeks, but it's got to be at least, it's usually 2 weeks to a month before we can actually
certify. Because we need all the information. We need every ingredient in the plant. We need to know what else is made in the plant,
right.
And we need to inspect it. So we have to go and see it. We have to have the mashgiach, the rabbi, the representative go in.
It could be koshering involved.
It could be koshering, which would take. I once certified a plant in like 2 days.
Right. Okay.
Is that a record?
Is
there a Guinness Book of World Records for koshering plants?
Right.
The way that worked, it was a very simple company. They were producing something that really was very simple. The only reason it needed a visit was because we can never certify a plant without visiting and seeing what's going on. You never know. But this was a relatively simple place, and they were very anxious. And I flew in the rabbi the next day. I think it was actually 2 days till I issued the letter. I always tell that to companies that we can do it. You know, if you want to, we can do it very, very fast. But really, it's a lot of times dependent on getting information from the company, and that takes longer. I'm just going into things that are surprise. Going back to that topic of surprise, things you find a surprise. I had a very big surprise from one of my mashgichim. He went into a company, again, that shall remain nameless, and it was a very simple factory. It almost the things that you can buy without a hashgacha. It is something that you can buy without a hashgacha, and hashgacha is just an added assurance that the company wants. But he found that in another room of the plant, they were actually making instant soup with a ground lard, chazer fat, pig fat, and they were grinding that up, and they were adding it to their soup. Now, it's a different room, and different production, but it's a small place, and it wasn't comfortable. You know, can I say that I don't think any of the lard would get into the product that we would certify? But it's not a comfortable thing, and we have to insist that not happen. But so you never know what you find. You never know.
Right.
You never know.
Asks the question of how often is there repeat repeat inspection of a factory once they receive the Star Kashkocha. And again, that varies depending on what type of factory we're talking about. But it's just to use again the example of the bakeries again. So a typical commercial bakery will be visited at least monthly after we give the Hashkocha. Sometimes more often. But it's at least a monthly visit.
Right. It's not a daily visit.
No, it's not a daily visit.
Not a daily visit, right. Because it's commercial, and they don't usually change things that rapidly.
Right.
And if they would, they risk losing their certification.
Right.
There's basically a standard, and there actually are meetings between the different agencies, the major agencies, Star-K, the OU, the Chof-K, and so on, that we have standardized the number of visits that it makes sense to go, right? We're not going to go every day unless it needs that. If it needs every day, we'll go.
Right.
But if experience shows it needs once a week or once a month or once a year, then we'll do that. And there's pretty much an agreement. And this is a lot of times why I tell people, they say, when there's a certain hashgacha that's not recommended, that's not up to par, and people say, well, what's wrong with it? Isn't it an Orthodox certification, so why don't you accept it? And this is the answer I like to give them, is that, well, I can't say what they're doing in their plants because I'm not there. But there is an agreement among the major reliable agencies what is required. And that agency is known to not stick to that. Because if it requires visits every month, well, it's going to be cheaper for the agency to visit once every 2 months or once every 6 months. And although we're not in every factory that they certify, we get the experience to know that they're not doing it the way that it should be. So that's one reason why even an Orthodox agency sometimes is not reliable. So again, we're here at the Starkey offices, and if anybody has any questions, you can ask us on the either telephone by hitting 1-1 or on the chat by just chatting it to us. We do have one more question here that we can take. How does a large certifying agency certify products made from fruits and vegetables that ordinarily require checking? For example, strawberry jams and jellies, preserves, fruit on the bottom, yogurts, etc. That's a good question. It really depends on the product.
Right.
Sometimes we'll make them wash the fruit, or we have a mashgiach, they're checking the fruit.
Right.
Sometimes the fruit is ground up.
Right.
It's
that's
like a mush.
That,
right. And that is halachically allows us to make certain assumptions about what happens to the bugs, which we can't get into right now. But it is something that is definitely looked at. Whenever we talk about fruit on the bottom or packaged items, we definitely want to know what's happening with the bugs in that fruit. There is another question here. Okay, someone's asking a detailed question about the Mott apple juice, and we'll have to look at that more carefully, and see what he's discussing. Okay, are there any other questions? Otherwise, we usually like to make these meetings about a half an hour, not to burden anyone on their who may be on their lunch break or whatever. Is there anything else that's major that's going on in the kosher world, Rabbi Bayer?
No, I think we covered.
Did we cover everything?
Raisins is the thing, you know.
Do you remember when the strawberries came out?
The strawberries
issue came out last year.
Well, this is like everything.
And we have a strawberry video that we showed on the last web conference, that Zev Stein put together, and that really showed you that there are insects
right.
on strawberries. The strawberry,
again,
what's it called? Is that the strawberry weevil? The strawberry thrip, maybe. There are things that do come to light.
But again, not an infestation. Not, like
not necessarily, right. It's not as bad as, let's say, dill or parsley, which may
right.
be even more infested.
Which is most probably
right.
the way the raisins are going to end up being also.
Right. That's correct. Right. Now, someone sent me an interesting thing from USDA that some of the pesticides that used to be used on raisins is also something that needs to be taken into account. That the what do they use? Methyl bromide.
Methyl bromide.
That became very expensive and really that was the thing that they used to fumigate. Fumigate means that they spray it. They smoke it. They cloud it over with an insecticide that it kills the bugs, the bug eggs, the eggs that hatch later into insects, and that became very expensive, and they just don't want it. They don't want to use it anymore.
Right.
And that could be something that needs to be looked at. You know, so there's a lot of things. The raisins is just coming now to the forefront, getting a lot of attention, and
right.
I think you're going to find diverging opinions from the agencies, and that's the way it goes.
Yeah, I'm sure by after Shabbos we should have a better idea of exactly what the story is.
Okay, somebody here is writing one more question we'll take. From David, I'm writing from Israel and I'm aware of the fact there are many ziyufim of something and then he got cut off. But I think what he means is like this, that there are many forged kosher symbols on Israeli products. That's what he's referring to. And are we aware of that? We are aware of it. And when something comes to our attention, we take note of it. But I would tell you, David, that I'm talking to you from the United States, and there are a lot of forged items over
right.
here as well. So it's not a surprise. And many people who are on this conference are joined with our alerts list, and that's how they got this information about this teleconference. And we send out alerts about particular forged products, and there are email lists that you could sign up for to be alerted about these things. And it's something you have to be aware of. It doesn't mean that if you walk into a supermarket, you have to be afraid that every certification mark is forged. I don't think so.
I think if it's a product that's too good to be true,
oh, yeah,
then it probably is.
Right.
And you should probably be careful, and that's probably a forged thing.
It never hurts if you see something new to look at the ingredients,
to
check it out. I'll tell you the best example I like to give with that is there was once an alert about a Circle U, an OU, on Purdue chicken sold at Sam's Club.
That's a good example.
Okay. So I can imagine the fellow walking down the aisles in Sam's Club, and he sees... He looks at this package. I don't know why he'd be looking at the Purdue package, but he catches his eye, and he sees that there's an OU on it, and he says, "Wow, this is great! 39 cents a pound for kosher chicken. Why should I go to the store and pay $3 a pound when I can get it here for very, very cheap?" And he buys the whole case of it, and he brings it home. Well, you have to be a smart kosher shopper to know that they're not going to put an OU on Purdue chicken because the amount of expense and the trouble, and if it was there, you would know about
it.
Believe me,
right.
You would have known that such a thing happened.
That's what we're saying. If it's too good to be true,
too
probably
good to be
is.
True. But actually, what it turned out over there, that it wasn't like a certification. They weren't trying to forge at Purdue. It was part of their date code. So let's say it had numbers like January 16th, 09, D, C, K, B,
right.
And then it had an OU. And that meant something to Purdue. They didn't know, or
it wasn't
meant to be a kosher symbol,
right.
But it was the kosher symbol. They didn't realize that it was a registered trademark.
Right.
It might have meant one of their plants where it was made. Who knows?
I think we had a case once a long time ago with a wine from Germany that was called.
Oh yeah,
Star
yeah,
K.
The wine, right? The wine
Star
from
K
Germany,
wine, and they actually had a Star K.
That's right.
That symbol.
The Star K wine from Germany.
Right.
That's a perfect example.
Right.
Right. So there too. Who brought it to our attention? The company was called Star K. It was a German company called Star K. That was their symbol, and they didn't realize it was a registered trademark. So who brought it to our attention? Somebody, some savvy shopper who saw it and realized it doesn't say on the back any Hebrew words or like Bishul Yisrael. I mean, not Bishul Yisrael, but Yain
Mevushel
or kosher for Passover, what it usually has on wine. It didn't say any of that. It just had a Star K. On the front, it was an odd place, so she called us, and that's how we noted it. So again, you want to be a smart shopper.
Someone just noticed that they found a
wine. Okay, we have a representative who works for the agency in Columbus, Ohio, and he was checking blackberries and strawberries for an event that required to be checked. He found a dead wasp among the blackberries, and you never know what you'll find. That's true, but... That's not common. You would see that right away. Also, while you're eating it,
hopefully
that's not the kind of. That's a good example, though, of something that's not really. I mean, that's something you don't want to eat it, and you want to take it out. Absolutely, but that's not something that requires a major check or a major to worldwide infestation kind of alert, because that's something people would see right away. The things that people don't see. Are those strawberry thrips and so on lettuce you have, on the romaine, on that.
Right.
So those are things that need more checking. All right, I think we've come to the end of our discussion, and I want to thank everybody for joining us. This discussion is held every last Wednesday of the month at noon. What's that, Deb? Oh, yes, we did record it, which I failed to mention at the beginning. But we didn't have anybody who spoke by telephone, so that didn't really matter. Anyway, you can find the recording at kosherclasses.org under the podcast. If you're not signed up, it's very easy to sign up there for an account. Kosher Classes, kosherclasses.org. You can find this this recording, and we look forward to seeing you next last Wednesday of the month, which is... February 25th, Rosh Chodesh Adar, the first day of Adar. So maybe we will discuss some Purim issues or wine.
Purim service.
beer,
a lot of forum talk.
Or liquor, and we look forward to seeing you then. If you have any comments or want to tell us how it went, please do so on the chat, or there is a place somewhere here, I'm not totally familiar with it, on the screen here, where there is a way to comment and send us your comments. I'm not exactly sure where that is. You may be able to find it on your screens. Or you can send us an email to star-k@star-k.org. And thank you very much for joining. We'll look forward to seeing you next time.
See you later.
Have a great day.